Where everything radically changes on the spiritual path is actually when we get to the point that we're no longer trying to hold on to the experiences of the light and push away the experiences of our unawakened, unevolved, unenlightened self and condition. But where it's when we get to the point where everything reveals the one, because of how our own perception and seeing of reality has shifted, every occurrence shows us the sacred.
Welcome to Meditation Changes Everything with spiritual teacher Craig Hamilton, a podcast exploring the deeper potentials of meditation practice and how it can change every aspect of human life. In today's episode, Craig explores one of the truly great mysteries of awakening, the profound truth of non-duality, or as it's more commonly known, oneness. As spiritual seekers, most of us intuitively believe in the idea of oneness. Yet we live in a world that appears to be made up of separate things. What does it really mean that, in its essence, everything is one? And what kind of meditation practice can open the door to this life-changing discovery? In this episode, Craig dives into the core of what non-duality really means. He also sheds light on some of the most common misunderstandings surrounding the idea of oneness and discusses its implications for our understanding of good and evil. Please note that this episode includes a brief guided meditation. We encourage you to listen when you're in a quiet place where you won't be interrupted. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the show.
The mystical traditions and the Enlightenment realization asserts that at the essence of all of this, there are not two things. There is just one. And this is the idea of non-duality, not two. The world might seem at the level of appearances to be a bunch of separate objects, and we might experience ourselves to be a separate subject who is encountering objects that are separate from us. That's sort of how the world seems, how life seems. That there are many, not one. That there are more than one. And non-duality reveals to us that this was not the case, that we're not real, that even though it might seem that way at the level of appearance, that there's a deeper, much more significant, essential truth beyond those appearances, which is that this is one, reality is one. There's one consciousness, there's one event happening here. So if we just take that as even just a proposition, you could say, well, it means one of two things. Because on a human level, it means one of two things. It either means that everything is you, that you are everything, that you are the one, the only one. Or it means the you that you thought you were isn't really a separate thing. And what's real is this great larger flow and pattern, and that you just misperceived things and thought you were a separate object, a separate subject from outside of it, perceiving it. So either it's all you or it's all not you. Okay. Maybe it would be a simple way to put it. But those are kind of the only two ways we can get to there being one. And both of those are completely valid ways of understanding non-duality. Both of those are deeply spiritual, mystical understandings, knowings of the truth of non-duality. If you look through the heart of the great wisdom traditions, the enlightenment traditions, you'll find expressions of non-duality framed in both of those, either of those ways. You'll find statements like there is just the one self with a capital S. And you are that one. You are the one. It's all you. Nothing is outside of you. Everything is inside of you and part of you. You'll also find statements that are more like this separate self that you've imagined yourself to be is really empty of substance, it's insubstantial, it's a dependently originating appearance that is really just, there's really just this endless interconnected flow of events. You can't find where one begins and another one ends. You can't isolate a self outside of just a lot of interdependent processes. And so where there's just this interdependent process of reality flowing. You feel how each of those is a profound mystical truth that isn't, and they're not in contradiction. They're almost just like two ways of looking at one truth or two ways of describing it. But they also have, you know, have slightly different qualities. They're slightly different kind of access points to this reality. And so I want to invite us now into meditation. So go ahead and settle into your meditation posture. Just become aware of yourself as consciousness in this moment. Beyond the thoughts, feelings, and sensations that are arising in your awareness, there is simply you as that awareness, you as the consciousness that is aware of this moment, that is aware of my voice, that is aware of the thoughts, sensations, and feelings that are coming and going within awareness. And as you rest as this essential awareness or consciousness that is who you are beyond the mind, allow yourself to recognize that everything that arises within your awareness is part of awareness. Everything that arises within you is you, is part of you. And if it's hard for you to recognize that everything you're aware of is part of you, then just practice relating to it that way. Relate to everything that arises as though it's part of you. Meaning actively choose to include everything in what you sense to be you. Or actively allow your sense of what you are to expand to include everything you're aware of. You don't need to go actively seeking to find new things to include in you, but just everything that arises in your meditation. Include it. Recognize that it's occurring within you. It's not outside. There is no outside of you. As you include everything in the consciousness that you are, as you allow the boundary between subject and object to fall away, you might begin to notice that everything that once seemed to be separate from you to just be a thing, a separate thing, is in fact animated by the same consciousness that is aware of it. Every movement within you is a movement in consciousness. Everything you become aware of is a manifestation of consciousness. It's all consciousness. There is a seemingly static dimension of consciousness, and there is a seemingly dynamic dimension of consciousness. But if we look closer, we just see it's just one flow, one thing happening, taking different shapes. Allow yourself to gently let go of the meditation. What I want to speak about is, maybe we could just say, why non-duality is such an important thing, such a significant insight or understanding. You know, there's one kind of deeply rooted, very common way of thinking about the spiritual journey that's embedded in the way most of us approach the path, whether we consciously think so or not. And that is the idea that the spiritual journey is a kind of journey from darkness to light. That is contained in the idea of enlightenment. You were in the dark, now you're in the light. You weren't seeing clearly, now you're seeing clearly. You were in your false self, now you've discovered your true self. You were ignorant of God, now you realized God. If you're in a more theistic context, whatever it is, there's a kind of code to this paradigm or DNA to the spiritual path that almost always presents itself or plays out as some kind of idea of moving out of darkness into light, moving out of one thing into another thing. And it's a great metaphor. There's a lot of truth to it. It's a powerful metaphor for our path. It can, that idea that narrative, that myth, I don't mean that in a, that it's false. I just mean that, you know, that story, that the architecture of that idea, it, you know, works powerfully to propel us on the path. We are discovering deeper truths, and in that we're seeing things that we used to believe that aren't true, and we need to push off against the falsehood and ignorance that we're recognizing, and reach and stretch to embody the new insights and truth. We're discovering newfound clarity about what's real and what's not, and that requires us to push away, like, off against the unreal and stretch toward the real. You know, so many dimensions of this that are that fit in that paradigm. So I guess I'm not wanting to unravel that paradigm per se, but to really illuminate that ultimately what the light represents in that metaphor, like what we really ultimately discover, is that it's all included in the light, and that nothing was ever an obstacle to the realization of our true nature. That nothing that's occurring right now, nothing that could ever occur, is outside of that one awakened consciousness that we now know ourselves to be. Now, this isn't something we want to just sort of, you know, adopt as an intellectual understanding and start trying to apply to our life. I'm going to embrace everything. It doesn't quite work like that, but I'm the reason it's worth talking, you know, this has to be realized. It has to be discovered through practice. We, in order for it to be meaningful, non-duality has to be awakened to and embodied. And that's what all these practices are trying to reveal it to us in our own experience, so we can let go into it and begin to live from it. But it's worth understanding how it works and why it works, and what, you know, what the point of it is, because that can help us as our path unfolds and we start to get glimpses of this. We can see, oh, this is what's starting to happen. Oh, okay, this is part of that non-dual realization. Because see, what really starts, like, where everything radically changes on the spiritual path is actually when we get to the point that we're no longer trying to hold on to the experiences of the light and push away the experiences of our unawakened, unevolved, unenlightened self and condition. But where it's when we get to the point where everything reveals the one, because of how our own perception and seeing of reality has shifted, every occurrence shows us the sacred. Everything reveals the essence, because we've learned how to see it, or we've awoken to it, the reality of it, and become so alive to it, so possessed by this depth, this deeper knowing, this profound consciousness, that we've let go of the need of the struggle. We've let go of the struggle to get there. We start to now accept, oh, this is reality. And then we start to be able to turn toward everything that previously seemed like an obstacle on our path. Our own mind, our crazy mind, our, you know, wild mind, or, you know, difficult emotional reactions to things. And we start to now turn toward those. And when we encounter them in their essence, they don't take us away from the awakening. They don't feel like, uh-oh, I can't think about that. That's going to take me away. Oh, I can't feel that because that's pulling me down. Oh, if I let those feelings come up, I'm going to go back into my old reactive pattern. if, you know, I let my mind be busy, I'll just lose touch with the depth. We still, oh, it's all depth. Mysteriously, it's all consciousness. Mysteriously, it's all already liberated. It's all already seamlessly interwoven into the one whole that this reality is. And there's no need to be afraid of it anymore. There's no need to reject any of it anymore. There's no need to be in tension with any aspect of my experience. I can hold all of it. I have room for all of it. In fact, not like gritting my teeth, I've got room to hold the painful things, but even those are windows or gateways that if I look at them directly, are showing me another facet of the jewel of enlightenment. They're revealing to me yet another face of this mysterious sacred reality that I'm living in, that I've always been living in. I just never saw it before. This is what non-duality points to. This is the significance of non-dual realization. And again, I'm not telling you this, you know, go out and try to impose that on your life. I mean, you can experiment with it. You can explore it by all means. You know, in radical spiritual truths can be contemplated, reflected upon, experimented with in our lives by all means. And all of that helps to start to just unravel the rigid fibers of the old paradigm of separation, of duality. So all of that's good. And yeah, but anyway, I guess I really wanted to talk directly about what this is pointing to and what it really means and what, how it's such a significant, how it's such a paradigm shift, what the fuss is all about around this radical shift into non-dual consciousness. It's this. It's that those, the kind of two Buddhist articulations of this, the form is emptiness and emptiness is form, or nirvana and samsara are one. That's what these ideas are, you know, they're touching on, they're pointing to. There's this Buddhist idea of one taste. Everything has one taste. When we discover the one taste, that everything tastes the same. It's another articulation of it. And this is at least one meaning and one reason that the word liberation is used to describe kind of ultimate spiritual release, ultimate spiritual realization, liberation, freedom. Because in this discovery of non-duality and the way I just described it, we are free. Nothing is in our way. Nothing that could ever arise is in the way of enlightened consciousness, of our knowing of the sacred. It all reveals it. And so there's no fight against anything internally. We've become inwardly free. The mind doesn't bind us. Our feelings don't control us. No sensation that arises could diminish our liberation. We're free no matter what happens. We're free in the face of all of it.
As Craig just shared, the discovery of oneness or non-duality reveals to us that everything has the same sacred essence. But how can we reconcile this with the reality that much of what we encounter in our world seems anything but sacred? In our next segment, Craig answers a question from a listener about how to confront the dichotomy of good and evil from a non-dual perspective.
Karen said, part of me has always wanted to believe in oneness, but While doing the meditations, I couldn't stop myself from thinking about Hitler, Daimler, etc. Am I supposed to believe that Hitler was God too? Probably what's driving your question is this sense that, like, there's a way of approaching the spiritual path where we're going from darkness to light. And we fit, you know, then inherent in that paradigm is push off against the darkness, stretch toward the light. And it's a good paradigm and it moves us a long ways on the path. But then I'm saying, but then we get to, you know, the subtlest reaches of what really the light is, what we become enlightened to. And I'm saying ultimately what we become enlightened to starts to reveal, it's where we're starting to see that everything has the same essence, that there's everything is part of one reality, that everything is shot through with this kind of sacred essence. Now, when we then the question becomes, well, then how do we account for evil in the world? Are you saying that evil is also good, or evil is also, you know, that all actions are equally good? And the answer is, of course not. and if you want to see the proof of that, you know, from an enlightenment perspective, look at the people that look at enlightened people, look at spiritually awakened people, look at saintly people, whatever you want to say, you know, people who awaken to this, do they start to, you know, be super evil some days and really good other days because to them it's all good? No. What happens as people awaken, they become more and more kind of ambassadors for good, for a very evolved morality that really is out for the good of the whole and really cares infinitely, burning with a kind of deep love and care for the greater good and for everybody. And it's that inherent in that is this impulse toward oneness, toward unity, toward wholeness, this feeling of, you know, nothing is separate from me. Nothing, I'm not separate from this whole. I care about the whole thing equally. So that's how it manifests. So, but still then we say, well, but how do we account for evil? It's probably what you're really getting down to. How do we account for destructiveness, cruelty, and evil? And the simplest way to look at that is it's an absence of the realization that I'm talking about. It's, you know, an absence of empathy. It's an absence of care. It's an absence of kindness. It's a deep, maybe self-centeredness. Often there's a kind of narcissism. Sometimes there's sociopathy and mental illness and a deep mental distortion and mental illness in people who are very evil. You know, there's a lot, you know, a lot's been written on the nature of human evil, but the point here is maybe how can our destructive tendencies, or, you know, how we all have destructive tendencies, how can those be transformed? How do we become transformed into an expression of the good? And I would say, as we realize this profound truth of non-duality, as we begin to embrace that we are the whole, that nothing's outside us, that starts to mean it's all our domain of care, meaning it's all my responsibility. It's all something I really care about. I want all of it to work. I want every human to be elevated. I want everyone to thrive. I want this whole event. I want us to evolve. I want us to deal with our problems in a constructive, healthy way so that we can create a thriving future for our species and other species and all of life, so that consciousness can continue to evolve, so that we, this love that I'm burning with can flow into the world, and we can ultimately create a world that is rooted in commitment to love and truth and come together. And there's a kind of utopian impulse in it, which has to do with all of us, you know, awakening to who we really are, the divisions between us falling away, us beginning to live in a kind of harmonic, creative, certainly creative tension. It's not that we all agree on everything in this utopian vision. The tensions between perspectives are what drives further evolution, but that fundamentally we could come into a paradigm of wholeness and unity that would transform our nature and the world. And I think that's what ultimately this points to.
This podcast is supported by our paying members in Craig's Awakened Life membership program. When you join the Awakened Life, each month you'll receive in-depth teachings and guidance in the practice of direct awakening, including a meditation workshop, 4 guided meditations, and a live online retreat with Craig. And when you register today, you can receive your first month for 50% off. Go to awakenedlifemembership.com to learn more and enroll. If you enjoyed today's episode, we hope you'll share our show with others, and please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to your favorite shows. If you have a minute to write a short review on your podcast app, we would deeply appreciate your support. You can stay connected to the show by subscribing to our newsletter at meditationchangeseverything.com. Each week, we'll send you new audios and videos from Craig, and we'll also let you know when we release new episodes of the show. If the approach to meditation we've been exploring today inspires you, you are invited to tune into a 90-minute online workshop Craig will be hosting called Meditation 2.0, The Miracle of Direct Awakening. In the workshop, he'll share a powerful new approach to meditation practice and guide you in a series of brief meditation experiments so you can experience it for yourself. You can listen to that at freemeditationworkshop.com. That's freemeditationworkshop.com. Check out our show notes for links to all the ways you can stay in touch with Craig's work. Meditation Changes Everything is created by Craig Hamilton, Susan Fries, Mason Ewald, Stephanie Murphy, Will Bowman, and Richard Klein. From all of us, thank you for tuning in.